right, well, we'll go ahead and get started today. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Sarah Addison, and I've been teaching for a number of years in the Christian school system. I went on to get my graduate degree in special education and had the opportunity to actually work at the Porter County Educational Services, where I served as their middle school, high school, severe and profound autism teacher. After that, I started working under the waiver of Indiana, working as a level 2 behavior therapist. So I've been in this field for about 8 years or so. And we're just going to go ahead and get into ministry and the exceptional learner. Reaching the exceptional individual. So the way that children learn has changed in many ways over the past years. Here are some of the statistics that are going to reflect that and the growing number of children and adults that struggle with learning or developmental disabilities. The term exceptional learners refers to those who may need specialized instruction and support, students who need instruction such as having special needs, or they may be gifted in a certain area. But today we'll focus on the students and children who have special needs of some kind and how to offer general support and consideration. So when we think of how to support those who have special needs, very rarely is it something that you can kind of give like a cookie cutter situation and say, well, do this, do this, do that. A lot of it depends on environment, it depends on the person, it depends on the need. So there's a lot of, I guess, puzzle pieces that go into supporting an individual who may have a special need. But if you look at the statistics, and these are all from the CDC website and or Autism Speaks, about 1 in 36 children have been identified with autism spectrum disorder. That's according to the CDC, and this is up from 1 in 44 children since 2022. And 2022 wasn't that long ago. It's estimated that 1 in 45 adults have an autism diagnosis. Sometimes we think a lot of it is kids maybe having special needs, but there are adults out there as well who struggle. Since the year 2000, there's been a 312% increase in the number of children diagnosed with autism. And this means that the rate of children with autism has tripled in just the past 25 years alone. In the United States, about 1 in 6 children have a developmental disability. Developmental disabilities are chronic conditions that are due to mental and or physical impairment. So it's probably likely, looking at the statistics, that you'll have maybe somebody in your ministry who comes in and maybe they'll have a special need or they'll have a developmental issue or lots of needs like that. So how can we be prepared when we work with people like this? Well, it's become clear that the way children learn and grow has changed over the years. And as we do ministry and try to reach these kids or adults with the gospel, we must change to support and accommodate them when we can. These children include those who have autism, developmental delays, mild intellectual disability. They may have a wide range of needs. And we could discuss many topics today, but we're just going to focus on general guidelines and helping these kids and adults. So think of this as just a very general session. Again, we could probably go into lots of discussion about what we would do to help somebody who comes into your ministry or into your church that has a special need. But these are just going to be general guidelines. So the first one that we want to do when we work with these individuals is we want to consider how we communicate with them. And communication is very important. Individuals who are on the spectrum or have a disability or a developmental delay of some kind, they definitely need help with understanding communication at times, and they're going to often struggle with both nonverbal and verbal communication, right? So it's not what we say, sometimes it's how we say it. And what is it, like 90% of all communication is nonverbal or something like that, that statistic. So what we want to do with our communication? Well, when we're considering it, we want to use simple and direct communication when we're speaking. So we're going to avoid sarcasm, and not only is it disrespectful, but they probably just won't get it. Avoid multiple step instructions. I think this is a good general rule when working with kids in general. Even adults, sometimes you get a list of things that you need to do. Everybody stand up, walk off the bus, stand in a straight line, go to your room, get your book, grab it, and go stand on the red line in the gym. Well, it's a lot of stuff to do. And I probably would have missed a step or two, right? So we're going to be very simple, and we're going to be avoiding multiple steps, just one or two things. Everybody stand up, go line up. Everybody walk down the hallway, stand on the red line. Giving them one or two things to focus on. And maybe once they complete that, then give the next set of instructions. When you do use instructions, you want to use words like first, next, and then to communicate what is coming next or when a desired activity will occur. So for example, we would say, first we'll have book time, then we'll have game time. This helps the individual know what is coming next and what they need to do before a desired event. So a lot of times too, if you work with little kids, what are they excited about? Snack time, game time, right? That's what they're looking forward to. Maybe play time. And you know, they focus on that, when is game time, when is game time, when is my snack? But maybe saying things like, well, first we're doing our book time and then we're gonna do our our game time. That can help them understand that first we have to do this, then we're gonna move on to the next thing. So using words like that will actually help you when communicating with them. When asking questions, you wanna use questions that allow them to give a simple yes or no answer. So for example, you're gonna avoid situational questions such as, how do you think Noah was feeling when he built the ark? Or what would you have done if you saw an angel? A lot of times kids who have autism cannot put themselves in somebody else's situation. They really lack empathy. And so if you ask them, you know, how would you feel if you had to build the ark? They would probably tell you, I don't know, I've never built an ark. Or I'm not going to build an ark, I can't tell you. So maybe if you have an individual like that in your ministry, stick to questions like, how old was King Josiah when he became king? Where was Rahab from? And those are really just factual questions. They can remember it. They don't have to try to put themselves in a situation to come up with how somebody would be feeling. Also, you want to give them extra time. Individuals that are maybe on the spectrum or they have a need. I think this is a good general rule for teachers. If you're teaching, sometimes people just need extra time to process a question. You know, how many times have you been, laying in bed at night and then you go, oh, that's what I should have said. Oh, that's what I should have said to that person. And it's not that you didn't know the answer. You just had to think about it, right? And they say usually you want to give about 8 to 10 seconds before you expect an answer. So giving them lots of time to process. You want to avoid using figurative language when giving directions. So for example, when we say, oh, everybody jump in line, well, what do you think that kid's gonna do? Because oftentimes kids who are on the spectrum, they're very literal minded. So when you say, let's jump in line, there they are jumping in line. And you know, now you as the teacher are a little upset because little Timmy is not listening to you. And it's maybe not because he's being bad, he's just thought you meant jump in line. So oftentimes we have to watch our figurative language. Saying, everybody look up. Well, he might be looking up at the ceiling because you didn't say everybody look up at the board or look up here at the teacher. So again, being simple and being very direct with what you want will allow that individual to be able to, that's a way of accommodating them. Avoid using figurative language in your lesson. Or if you need to use it, take the extra time to explain what it means and be prepared to explain some of the Bible's picture words and parables. So for example, when we say phrases like born again, washed in the blood of the Lamb, accept Jesus into your heart, you know, we kind of take it for granted because we may have grown up in church. We're used to hearing phrases like washed in the blood of the lamb. We know that we did not literally have to get doused in the blood of a lamb, right? We kind of know that's just a picture, a phrase. And somebody who may be very literal-minded or maybe has no church background, when we come and we say these phrases, we need to be willing to explain what they mean, because oftentimes it can go over their heads. So taking the time to explain the parables, you know, Jesus taught a lot in parables. He taught in picture words. And I think it's important for us to do that as well. However, Jesus took the time to explain what some of these parables meant. We think of Nicodemus, John 3, and he came and he said, how am I supposed to be born again? Am I supposed to, you know, crawl back into my mother? How is this supposed to happen? And Jesus took that time to explain that, no, this is not literal. This is more of a figurative thing. So when you're doing your lesson, if you know that somebody in your, you know, ministry might, you know, have a special need or a developmental delay, you might have to take that extra time when you're preparing and be conscientious of that. And how can you help explain that a little bit more? Individuals on the spectrum or on that just have special needs, as a general rule, they can understand better with visual aids. So using visual aids throughout your lesson to explain hard or foreign concepts, that's always a good thing. I can actually remember several visual aids that my beginner teacher used, even to this day. So don't ever underestimate the power of a really good visual aid. Using visuals to communicate rules and procedures. You might have to take a picture of what you want done. They may have to actually see it. You may have to say, you know, we get together with your team and take a picture of Mr. Dan sitting correctly, and that might have to be what you show them whenever you have your rules. It can't just be words. Sometimes it has to be pictures. So be prepared to maybe come up with some classroom rules and have it be pictures instead of words. But also know that the teacher may be the visual aid too. The teacher might have to model the desired behavior or procedure. So you, as the ministry leader, might have to show them, everybody, we're gonna walk down the hallway, make your body look like mine, and this is what we're gonna do. So you might actually have to take that extra step and show them what you are expecting of them. So we wanna consider our communication, but we also wanna consider our environment. Individuals with special needs often struggle with adapting to their environment. So, things to keep in mind with our environment. Some things are just going to be out of your control. You cannot control your environment all the time. You have background noises, people walking in the hallways, traffic from outside, certain smells, the lighting conditions, they can't always be avoided, right? So if your church is anything like our church, every room is used for 5 different things throughout the week, whether it's a Christian school, whether it's Wednesday night kids activity, Sunday school, children's church, every room is got 1,000,005 uses, right? So you can't always take things down from off the wall that's at the Christian school and what they're working on, or the Bible verse that they talked about on the Wednesday night. You may not be able to do that. Sometimes rooms are set up in a way that's safety. And so we have to consider our environment, and some of these things are just gonna be out of our control. A good rule of thumb is to always keep your environment clean and organized. Clean and organized. Not only is it good for your ministry, but it's also good for the ministry coming in after you. You want to give individuals only 2 or 3 options or choices. Having too many options to choose from can just make it very confusing for them. I also teach Sunday morning, I teach toddler Sunday school. And when the toddlers come in, while we're taking attendance and we're waiting for them, we let them play puzzles. And we only give them maybe one or two puzzles to choose from, because if you've worked with toddlers, what happens is they get very excited about this puzzle, and they really like the sound it's making, and it's, you know, whatever the sound is, they get excited about it, and they probably don't finish it because then they got distracted with this one over here, and this one's very colorful, and they like this one, and then that one kind of falls on the floor, and well, forget about that one anyway, because this one over here has animals, and they just like animals, right? So we've just created a very confusing, chaotic, and messy environment, right? Now you have to take work, put all these puzzles back together, all this stuff. So we went ahead and as a class, we decided we're only letting them have maybe two or three options to choose from because it can just get very overwhelming at times. And that's not just for them, it's also for the teacher and whoever's leading the ministry. Your environment could actually lead to health concerns or behaviors. Health concerns or behaviors. So the lighting or excessive movements can actually trigger seizures in some individuals. It's not uncommon when you're working with people who have special needs. They often have health concerns, whether they got a lot of allergies or whether they've got other diagnosis, dual diagnosis. It's really not uncommon for them to have other medical issues as well. Too much sensory input could lead to behavior issues. So loud or sudden noises, such as automatic toilets, hand dryers, fire alarms, cell phone ringers, may be scary. Sometimes when you're working with kids who have special needs, they have a hard time regulating their nervous system, and they have a hard time calming themselves down. And so something that maybe you go into the bathroom and it's just an automatic hand dryer. But to them, maybe they weren't expecting it, now they're scared, and they're all the way up here, and it's gonna take them a little bit to come back down. And that's just kind of how their nervous system works with that. So just be aware that, you know, maybe they were caught off guard with some of these different noises and such. Open spaces may lead to individuals eloping or running off. That word eloping, I thought everybody knew this, but then when I went to go prepare it, it was brought to my attention because my brother-in-law thought eloping meant just running off and getting married. And so he didn't know why I would be talking about running off and getting married with those who have special needs. But that's not what we're using the word here for. We're using it, it's a medical term, and then it's also a psych term for running off unsupervised. So that's what the word elopement means. It's not catching the first flight to Vegas with your significant other. So just be aware of that. But when you have open spaces, sometimes kids who have a special need may feel the need to run and they'll just take off. And if you ever find yourself in that situation where you're looking for a child who maybe has autism or a special need, the first place you want to check is a body of water. It has to do with their sensory system. It also has to do with a lot of other things like their inner ear. It's kind of complex, but know that in case, hopefully you're never in that situation because that's a scary situation. But if you do, go ahead and check the nearest body of water first. The next thing you want to do is you want to accommodate environmental issues whenever you can. So you can allow certain individuals to sit in the back of the class, rest their head, use their equipment, such as noise-canceling headphones. When we have kids who have a special need, sometimes they'll come in with equipment. It could be, like I said, noise-canceling headphones. Sometimes they'll come in with like a communication board. We call it a PEC system, where they exchange words for, they'll touch a button and it will repeat a phrase. Something like that if they're nonverbal. So whenever we have those kids who come in, we want to try to be accommodating of that. You may not know how it works, and that's okay, but just try and have an attitude of accommodating them, letting them wear their equipment. If it's really distracting, let them sit in the back. That way they can feel like they're part of the class as well or part of the ministry. So we want to accommodate them whenever necessary. You want to be sensitive to the fact that these individuals may not be able to regulate their emotions. And obviously, this doesn't give them the right to disobey directions. However, you can provide and support and make an environment by being understanding. So again, just having an attitude of flexibility. How can you help them? What can you do to make them feel welcome? And then number three, we want to consider our responses. Our response to individuals can either, it can hurt or it can help our ministry. So how we respond to individuals, and they know too, you know growing up what teacher you felt like didn't like you or things like that, but it can hurt or help our ministry, and we definitely want it to help them. Things to keep in mind with the way that we respond, you may need to adjust your expectations. Adjust your expectations. You know, what one child can do doesn't mean that his peer can also do it. I worked with an individual who, he was a 41-year-old man, and you would have thought he was a 41-year-old man just by looking at him. But then when you started talking to him, he probably was mentally more on the age of 12 or 13. So sometimes we have to adjust what we are expecting from these individuals. And they may require extra support. You may have to work with them. You may have to repeat yourself more. But you may have to lower those expectations. Be sensitive to the fact that these individuals may not always know how to act or behave in church. They may not have ever gotten the opportunity to attend a church ministry function. They may not know basics, such as walking in line, sitting through a lesson, or raising their hand when they have a question. A lot of parents who have a child with a special need can't always take their kid to church. Even if they're very dedicated Christians, I've known some mothers who are Christian. They would love to go to church, but you know, they have a child that requires a lot of supervision, and they would not take them to church until they learned a certain skill or until they felt like they were ready. I used to work with an individual, and he was about 26 years old. He was nonverbal, and his mom told me one time, I think this was shortly after COVID, she wanted to go back to church. She was a devout Catholic lady. She said, I want to go back to church. And as a Christian in the secular field, I was, oh yeah, definitely, you go to church, and very much encouraged her to do it. And everything went pretty well for them. But as they're sitting through the sermon, he gets up, this young man gets up, he goes to the back of the church, and he sees the little citron where they have all the holy water. He starts drinking it all up, and he starts going through the holy water. And this mom was like, oh my goodness, you know, she was. And honestly, I don't think anybody really noticed because it was in the back of the church, but she was embarrassed, she felt judged. Oh my goodness, how can I take my kid? I can't take him anywhere. And he would get aggressive. And so she had to just let him drink the holy water. And then when he was done, they left the church. But parents don't always get that opportunity to bring their child. And maybe they don't come until they're able to learn a new skill or learn how to be in a setting that's ministry. Individuals may be immature, and they may not act appropriately for their age. They may be behind emotionally and developmentally. So we want to focus on what they can do instead of what they cannot do. usually, like I said before, I was working with a man who was 41 years old. Mentally, he was probably about 13. There's a big difference between what a 13-year-old can do and what a 41-year-old man can do. And when you have individuals who walk in, and biologically, they may be like 16, they may be like 15, but then, you know, they kind of mentally, maybe they're like 10 or so. There's a big difference between what a 10-year-old can do and what a 16-year-old can do. So again, you might have to adjust your expectations, and you might have to, you know, keep in mind that mentally they're one age, well, physically they're another age. Avoid power struggles at all cost. Usually when that happens and there's a power struggle, in my experience, nobody wins. Everybody gets upset. The day's kind of ruined because you said, look, it's my way or the highway. And there is definitely a time for a teacher to say, this is my procedure, this is what we're doing, you know, try to conform to what's going on. But there's also a time for us as people who are, you know, in the ministry and who are teachers to say, you know what, maybe our Sunday school lesson, we're going to cut it by 5 minutes, you know, or maybe we're going to insert a song. And it might mess up our schedule, and it might mess up where we were hoping to go with it. But sometimes that's necessary to say, well, you know, we're not able to have as maybe long of a lesson as I thought, so we'll have extra playtime, or we'll have a snack here, or we'll put a song in, because you might have to adjust to their needs. And I think sometimes teachers come in saying, you know, you have to conform to me. And there is a time for that. Definitely a time for procedure, definitely a time for structure. But I think a lot of times we can get caught up in that. And then as teachers or ministry leaders, we have to maybe take a step back and say, you know what, maybe we need to be conforming a little bit to what the kids are doing. What can they do? So we want to avoid a power struggle at all cost. Be realistic in your expectations to provide adequate and quality care or support. You may need to let parents know that you're unable to meet the needs of the child. So there is a time where you might have to say, you know, we enjoy having you guys here. We really look forward to you coming. But unfortunately, we don't have enough people in our ministry to give the kind of support that, you know, Timmy needs right now. And so know your own limits, too. Because a lot of times when we don't know our limits and then we're put in certain situations that require a lot of support from us, things can happen that maybe you didn't plan on it. So you need to make sure that you're keeping yourself checked and your emotions checked. What are my, you know, what's my limits as somebody who's leading and providing care? And, you know, maybe you do have to have a sit-down heart kind of conversation with your pastor or whoever's in charge of your ministry and say, you know, hey, we need help. We need to come up with a plan. What can we do? So being aware that knowing your kind of what you are capable of doing as well. And then you want to avoid comments that may sound judgmental. Parents and families are sensitive to this kind of verbal and nonverbal response. I have taught school. And if you have ever been in the Christian school system, or if you've been a Sunday school teacher, or you've been a children's church worker or a bus worker, you know that the kids that are rambunctious or maybe need special needs or have behavior issues, they come every single Sunday. They don't miss. And as a Christian school teacher, those kids get the perfect attendance award. They are there. They don't go on vacation. They are very, very faithful, and praise the Lord that they are, right? But it's very easy for us when we're working in the ministry or we're teachers, and your day, you're excited to start your day, and then there comes that child, that behavior issue, or whatever it is, and you just kind of sink, or you lose your posture a little bit, you sag your shoulders, you roll your eyes, whatever you do, and you may say, we're so happy to have you here, as you kind of lose it. But kids, even if they don't pick up on it, parents pick up on it. And the people who pick up on it are the most are mothers. Mothers have this ability to know whether somebody's judging them or not. They are very sensitive to that. Oh, we don't have our act together. We don't look like a Hallmark Christmas card. They're going to think that we can't do this, and everyone's going to think that I'm a failure as a mother. So we don't want to ever put anybody in that situation. We want parents to feel like, yes, we are excited that your kid is here. We're excited that he's coming to our ministry. But we also want to know that when we're supporting this individual, we're also supporting the parent or the caregiver. Some of these parents, like I said, they have to be the primary caregiver for their child, and they don't even get time to take a nap. They don't get time to, drink their coffee. So when we're supporting them, when we're supporting the kids, and we're allowing them to come to our ministry, it's allowing parents to take a little bit of a break. They may not get to read their Bible for a full 15 minutes because something's happening or their child is interrupting them. So keep that in mind whenever we're supporting these kids, we're supporting the parents as well. The next thing we want to do is we do not want to assume anything. We don't want to assume anything when we're working with those who have special needs. Don't assume that because an individual attends school that they know how to act in an instructional setting. Their school day may look very different than what you think. They may have a shorter school day. Sometimes kids who have special needs, they're only attending school maybe 4 days a week. Or they're not, because they get so sick or they are having a lot of doctor's appointments, they get a lot of excuse absences. So their school day may be very, very different than what you look like. There's all sorts of therapies now that go on. There's behavior therapy, there's music therapy, there's occupational therapy. I've heard of schools having therapy dogs, sensory rooms. You know, if there's a meltdown, they're allowed to go to a room and work with their counselor or something like that. So you don't want to assume that, oh, you should be able to walk in a straight line. Well, no, because sometimes they may have somebody that escorts them from room to room. So you don't know what their school day looks like. You don't want to assume that they're not listening. Individuals that have these needs will look for things that stimulate and engage their senses. So for example, maybe they're rocking, maybe they're quietly humming, covering their ears, or even closing their eyes. Many times their bodies will crave movement, and for them it is an overwhelming urge and they have to do it. So again, maybe have them sit in the back if they need to, you know, stand up or walk around, something like that. Maybe you can work it out with your ministry coordinator, whoever's above you. But also, don't assume that they're not necessarily listening to you. You'd be surprised at what kids in general, let alone kids who may have special needs, pick up and what they're capable of doing. So just be aware of that. And also don't take it personal. You know, sometimes we take it personally, like, look, I prepared this lesson. I spent 15 minutes and, just going over some of the stuff and you're in the back of there rocking or, you know, something that we feel like they're not listening. So don't necessarily assume that people are not listening to you. Don't assume that they can read or write or that they know the basic information about themselves. I've worked with individuals who were very, what we would call neurotypical. They seemed like they had it. They were kind of, you know, what we would think of an average school-age child to be like. And then they started talking and they started doing things, and it was like, oh, okay. I don't think you're quite up to the. Maybe I have to lower my expectation. And then I've known some individuals who. They're nonverbal, they need help putting their shoes on, they can't tie their shoe, but they can write out the whole Declaration of Independence word for word. So don't ever be, you know, don't assume that they can't read, but don't assume they can't write. They may be able to, you never really know about what they can do. So always just ask them, you know, even ask them if you can. It may be a good idea to have a new student form where parents can fill out information regarding their abilities of the student. If you have a child who has a lot of special needs, It's not uncommon for a parent just to hand you a folder when they meet you. And that folder has like all about, you know, the individual, what they've been diagnosed with, what it looks like if they're having a seizure, what they can eat, what their favorite toys are, where their backpack's located, if they have any medication, information like that, how their wheelchair works. I've had individuals, parents give me folders where that's an information knowing how their wheelchair operates and what they can and can't do. So don't be surprised if you get quite a bit of information about that. We also do not want to assume either that they are saved or that they cannot comprehend the message of salvation. The Bible states that we're to go into all the world, preach the gospel to everyone, and the Lord is not a respecter of persons. You know, just because, you know, the little boy has maybe a learning issue and he raises his hand, oh, I'm not gonna ask him about, you know, salvation. You don't know. You don't know. I mean, when you come to the Lord, you have to have faith like a child. And the gospel is very simple. It's not complex, and you don't know that they really are ready for salvation. They might very well be. So don't assume that. Oh, they have a need, or oh, they couldn't even really read a Bible verse, so I don't think they can comprehend salvation. That's not really our place. Our place is to go and tell and let the Lord and the Holy Spirit work in that area. Just some final thoughts is that whenever we're working with those who have special needs, we want to gather as much information about this individual as you can. You want to ask as many questions as you can to the parents or the caregiver, such as, does your child have any sensory issues? How does your child prefer to communicate? Are there any triggers? One time I was working with an individual, and he was, I want to say he's about 25, and he was nonverbal. He got mad about something, and he just started tearing up the room. He started walking, pacing, and at my work, it's my job to figure out why he's doing certain things. And it took us forever, and we finally got him calmed down. And when I talked to his dad about it, his dad said, that's how he gets whenever his stomach hurts. And I thought, well, why didn't you tell me that beforehand? Because if I would have known that beforehand, you know, I might have been able to help him with it, or he slept on his neck wrong, or his throat hurt him. And so it's always good to establish that relationship with the parent, the caregiver, because when there's a relationship established, there's a lot of talking that goes on, and, you know, you may be able to avoid a lot of things if you have that information. Again, just know your limits when working with people that require extra support. It's a very demanding field. It's a very demanding job. It can be very demanding as a church worker who's maybe working with somebody who has special needs. So, again, know your limits when you're working with people that need that extra support. And then keep in mind that you might not have the resources or the knowledge to work with these children or adults that have special needs, and that is okay. You know, hopefully there's a lot of churches that are starting to do this where they'll have what they call a sensory room. And in this sensory room, they'll actually take the message or they'll put up a TV and they'll stream the service into this room. And you can control the air conditioning and the heating, and you can control the lights. And it's an environment kind of like where these special needs people can go and they can participate in the service. And, you know, if they want to stand up during the service, they can stand up. They're not going to be distracting anybody. But obviously not every church is going to have that, right? Not every church has the building or the material or the funds to do something like that. So just knowing your own limits and what you have, the kind of resources that you have to really give quality care and support to these people. And then remember that you often only see certain parts of your individual story. So we don't always see what's going on in people's lives. I know sometimes when we see somebody in the Walmart, in the aisle and some kid's having a meltdown, and the first thing that pops into our mind is, those parents should have raised them better, right? Or why doesn't that mom step in and do X, Y, and Z? And maybe there's a reason why people don't do what we think they should do. And it's very easy for us to judge at times. I was working with an individual, and this woman, actually she had fired the previous therapist because she didn't like her. And my boss gave me the case and said, I want you to work with this woman because it's probably just a matter of time till she says she doesn't want to work with our company anyway. So I went ahead and I started working with her. And this woman was very difficult to work with. She was very mean at times. She would say swear words. When you went to go visit her house to go work with her, you'd ring her doorbell, and then there's a window right there by her, in her house, and you would see her head pop up and down as she ran away from the door. And you thought, well, I'm standing right here. And as soon as you drove away, she would call you, are you coming to see me? And I'd say, no, I just came to see you, and now I have to go. And it was very difficult to work with this woman. And I even sat down with my boss, and I said, you know, I don't know how long I can work with her. I have no idea. She's very hard to get to know. She's hard to build a relationship with. She's got, you know, I'm trying to build a rapport, build a relationship, build trust with her, and it is just not working. And so eventually I got to know her. I got to do some work with her. And we found out that she had fired the previous therapist because she didn't like her. She drove a truck. And that wasn't going to work. And we thought, you know, I contemplated buying a truck, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, so I started working. I mean, it just one thing after another. And then I found out her story. And I found out eventually, 2 years it took me going to her house every single day and working with her, finding out the kind of abuse that she had been subject to, finding out why she doesn't like trucks, because things happen in trucks that she couldn't control and she didn't like, and the kind of abuse she went through. And when I had found out that day, I was very humbled. I was very kind of like a sober moment that, you know, this woman, there's a reason why she's running from the door when you're trying to work with her. There's a reason why she doesn't like trucks. There's a reason by some of this stuff. And I think sometimes we will jump to, you know, I just don't want to work with this person. Or we can get very judgmental. And oftentimes, too, when there's an individual who has a special need, a lot of times we don't always see that story and what's really going on until we build that relationship with them. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But I hope those were some good things that you can remember. And we'll go ahead and pray really quick, and then you guys can be dismissed. Dear Lord, we thank you for this opportunity. We thank you for all that you've done. We just pray that you would be working in the hearts of us as we go about doing our own ministry, Lord. And I just pray this in your name. Amen.